Today I thought, I don't know why this thought came to me about a month ago, but it comes to me about every other month or so, about those of us who struggle for truth, justice, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. There are times we get overwhelmed, and there are times, I'm sure, where it seems like our voice is a voice in a wilderness as Unitarian Universalists. And one thing I've noticed about voices in a wilderness, they're always on the edge of the city. They're always out in the wilderness. They're the marginalized places. The places not in the center where the activity of the city goes on, where, as I can understand, more conformity takes place. Because the voice in a wilderness usually stands in opposition to much of what goes on in the city. For example, if you look out this window right here and you look kind of up that way, one thing we appreciate about Florida is the beautiful skies, the clear skies. But many of you might not have known this, but last Monday night, Florida Power and Light made a presentation to the county of Port St. Lucie. The presentation was about building a coal-burning power plant. And in this presentation, and I didn't know till we got there at 6 o'clock, it started at 6, we left at 12, the meeting went on till 5 o'clock. And I didn't know that if this coal-burning power plant would have passed, there would have been 700-foot tall smoke stacks right up there that you would have seen. And there was an effort to marginalize the voice of protest against that. And it went something like this. Apparently, when you want to change zoning, that if you're within 500 feet of where the rezoning takes place, you have a right to protest and you have a right to speak against it. And if a majority of people who are affected that speak against it say, no, we don't want this, you have to get a 4-1 vote to win rather than a 3-2 vote to win in order to rezone the rezoning bid. And so in the beginning of this process at 6 o'clock, somebody came up and said, look, we got 67% of these people that said they don't want this, so you need a 4-1 victory in order to do this. And immediately the representatives from the Florida Power Light Company said, well, we want to postpone this meeting. There was 500 citizens there and a supposedly 1-hour presentation by Florida Power and Light, which took 4 hours, which was very slow, very wordy, very detailed, which was marginalizing our minds, so our voice in a wilderness went away and away and away the further more and we fell asleep. Okay, so an attempt to obviously send us home. Okay. Then what he said was, well, what we'll do is we'll just make our plan so that we don't build 500 feet to the edge. So we will eliminate any possible maneuvering so it would go from a 3-2 to a 4-1 vote. We will manipulate the codes so we don't have to deal with the voice of the citizens. Now, needless to say, one of the county council persons said, it seems to me you're trying to circumvent our codings, and our codings are here for a purpose. So the meeting for the Florida Power Light at that point was no longer off to a good start, because they began to aggravate the county commissioners. Well, it did not pass. It did not pass. Okay. But how many of us heard about that conversation? How many of us were aware? And I've spoken here before, and I've mentioned often the voices of the prophets in the Old Testament. When there's one of the prophets are saying that people lay awake at night and make plans and use their power because they can do it, and they do these things in the secret of the day, and they plan it at night because they can do it. And that voice came to my mind, that verse came to my mind when I was listening. How come there are only 500 people here? My neighbors didn't hear this. Other people didn't hear this. And this would be a major change for this community. Things like this happen all the time. I'm reading a book called Radicals in Robes. And Radicals in Robes are about the Supreme Court and that there is a new movement in this country that's gaining power, and it's called strict constitutionalists. Strict constitutionalists are people that say that you have to go back and read the original document. And anything that's not in the original document cannot be addressed or cannot be attended to. It's like fundamentalism. It's literalness. What that means is there would be no child labor laws. There would be no laws protecting the rights of gay persons. There'd be no rights protecting the laws of the woman's right to vote. Because these were not addressed in the original document. And if they're not addressed in the original document, you can't talk about them, you can't touch them, you can't make laws about them. So we would go back pre-1930, 1920, and move the Constitution back there. What is left out of this book is that at the same time the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, was being written, there was also many state laws about boundaries around corporations and the largest of corporations and the life of corporations. Like, once the agenda of the corporation is met, because you create an agenda to the state, we say, yes, you can create this corporation to do this agenda. Once that agenda was completed, the corporation was disbanded. Period. Corporations, by law, had to do what was beneficial to the people. Period. Andrew Jackson, in the big case when the bank was beginning to really take over and going against the government, completely disbanded the bank. I forget the name of the bank, but this bank that was beginning to take over. So we know that along with the Constitution, there was these laws protecting the persons against businesses becoming so large they could become oppressive. In the strict constitutionalist mind, they're only attending to the original document, but they're not addressing the laws that we have lost through time, through the Supreme Court, that would protect us from business becoming so large that they would become more powerful than the voice of the people. So we have, from what we could look out of our window to become overwhelming to us and put us into a voice in a wilderness, we also have this things that are in the air that we don't hear about unless we're really attentive to reading the books, but eventually through the generations will come down and affect us personally. So there's a continuum of what's going on personally to what's going on out here nationally and internationally that will eventually come together and affect us personally. And it does get overwhelming. And at the same time, I'm celebrating because the other day I went out and caught my second snook I could keep. And it's sun shining, you know, and I've got gas to put in my motor to go out on the boat. And I'm going to go home and watch the football game, maybe be happy about it. You know, there's dinners, and we go to the park, and we go to the beach, and it's a good life. And we could stay in that good life and not pay attention to other things and enjoy that good life. But there's something inside of us that churns, that hears, what is Florida Power and Light doing? What is this radical in robes? What is that about? And we move beyond ourselves. And we begin to talk about the larger issues. So I don't go fishing as much. So on Monday night, I go up to the county courthouse. I don't go fishing as much. I read a book that I think that would be helpful to me to understand what's going on in the ether, what's going on in the changes. And it's easy to get overwhelmed, and it's easy to stay overwhelmed. There is this human capacity. Some people call it a spiritual capacity. Some people call it a gift. Some people call it a curse. It is the capacity to dissociate. It is the capacity to live in a diminished way so that we do not fully enjoy who we are as human beings. Daily we are bombarded with images through our mass media that diminishes who we are as human beings. We are to equate these images. We see images of people being wounded in war, and the very next images, we see images of Hollywood characters who are getting a divorce, and we see this and we see this, and somehow they're to be equal because one comes here and one comes here, and there's a sequencing of images that equals them in importance. It diminishes my capacity of empathy for the real things of this world, and then the things that are not real, the fanciful things that stimulate and titillate my good feelings, move me away from the deep things of this world so that I'm distracted from the real things. when that goes on often enough, I begin to move away from my inner world, from my empathy, so that when I hear of horrible things, of people dying, it doesn't move me to action. I'm still, I don't move. We hear recently, and we watching C-SPAN, I watch the thing about the budget and this, and the Democrats stand up and say, look, you're cutting the Pell Grant, you're cutting education, you're cutting Medicaid, what are you doing all this for? And at the same time when they do that, I think these are horrible things, and at the same time when they're doing that, they do not bring up, we just passed bills to give $90 billion to the largest corporations in the world. We just passed a bill to give $400 billion to the pharmaceuticals, subsidies to the pharmaceuticals, and we could certainly have used some of that money to beef up the Pell Grants, to beef up the education, to beef up Medicaid, but they don't mention that. So I'm overwhelmed at why aren't you mentioning that? Why isn't this part of the discussion that we are redistributing wealth, and the wealth that we are redistributing is clearly going away from one group of people to another group of people? What we are doing is we are making a pathway to create more poor young men and women. When you cannot find a job that pays a living wage, when you cannot go to college, when you can no longer live at home, what do? I know what I did at 18, 19, 20. I thought, what about the armed services? I can't make it here, I can't make it here, I can't make it here. Are we indirectly, economically, moving toward a pathway where more people will find the armed services as a more acceptable route because choices are being eliminated economically that make our future look bright? Is that what's happening? Are we making a way for people in our country to join the armed services, and when they find themselves in the armed services, they find ourselves in horrible conditions, roadside bombs. They look at the confusion. There's conversation about not enough armor for vehicle, and they look back at this country, and we're building SUVs as fast as we can build them, so there's no lack of steel. Is that confusing? Yes, it's confusing. It's confusing to me. But it's not confusing to some others. So when we stand up and we begin to look at these things, whether we agree, disagree, however we're going to fight for justice, however we're going to stand up and speak for those people who are oppressed, because that is our faith tradition. Our faith tradition was born speaking out against oppression. We get overwhelmed. We get dissociated. There's something missing that would move us past the dissociation and the being overwhelmed. I thought I'd read one of the things that I noticed when I was reading, when I think of the voice in the wilderness, I think of John the Baptist, and I was reading and talking about this, and both Helen and I were surprised at what John the Baptist said after the crowd paid attention to him. John the Baptist said to the crowds coming from those who he was going to baptize and those who were witnessing and looking, and he said, "You brood of vipers, I am warning you to flee from the coming wrath. You should be producing fruit keeping with congruence with your repentance, but you don't say for yourselves that you have Abraham as your father, for I tell you, out of these stones God could raise up children from Abraham. The axe is ready. The axe is already at the root of the trees, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire." Well, this got their attention because he thought they were talking to them. Okay? Here's what they said. They said, okay. What do we do? What do we do? Okay, so John answered them. Here's what you do, and listen. The man who has two tunics should share with him the one who has none, and the one who has food should do the same. Tax collectors also came to be baptized. This teacher, they asked, what should we do? Don't collect any more than you're required to collect. Then some soldiers asked him, and what should we do? And he replied, don't extort money, don't accuse people falsely, so you can blackmail them, and be content with what you have. He's talking about economic justice. That's what he's talking about. often I can think of my history and in the church, and when I hear people talking about the voice in the wilderness, what's mostly followed by that, he's announcing the coming of Jesus. He's announcing the coming of God. No. He is speaking to the injustice of an economic system that oppresses the poor people. That's what he's doing in the wilderness. That's what the prophets do in the wilderness. And of course he was imprisoned and beheaded. So, this voice in the wilderness, I think we need to pay attention to it for a number of reasons. But yet we are in the line. We are in, as Unitarian Universalists, in this prophetic line. And the prophets did become overwhelmed and they did become depressed. Moses, he's called to free people from slavery, another economic oppression. And what was his cry? He says, I can't do this by myself. Don't ask me to do this by myself. I can't carry all these people by myself. Elijah, he was called to speak after the prophets speaking against economic oppression were all killed. He was called to speak, so he had some anxiety about that. And so he did speak, and while he did speak, the Jezebel and the leaders of the other prophets who were coming in, who were just some of those just killed, he ran away. He said, I got to get out of here. He ran away. While he was in a battle for their mind, he ran because he was afraid. Jeremiah, he spoke against economic oppression. They threatened to kill him. They threw him in prison. They threw him in a cistern. Martin Luther King, who went up to Tennessee to stand with the sanitation collectors, was shot. Being a voice in a wilderness is overwhelming because we are aware of the economic injustice. We are aware of what big companies would do when they don't put to a community vote that we're going to put 700-foot-tall smokestacks over there, so when we look over to the west, to the north, west from here, we'd see smokestacks with smoke billowing out of them with 200 pounds of mercury falling out every year. But of course, they said the mercury would go far, far away and not affect us. But it's okay that if we send the mercury to somebody else's backyard. That's how they tried to sell that. It is overwhelming. And we are in that tradition. Women Unitarian Universalists, the women ministers who were out in the Midwest, and this is another hard story, but very hopeful story, that during the 1870s to the 1910, 1920s, there were many women out in the Midwest who were pastors, who were preachers in Unitarian churches and Universalist churches, not yet joined together. Okay, they didn't get paid a lot. They were boom towns, muddy streets. It was hard work. The men who were back at Harvard in the East, they had stone streets, getting paid well. They didn't want to come to the Midwest. Their calling did not call them to where the streets were full of mud. Okay? It only called the women at that point, is what happened. So now, when Harvard and this more money started coming in, the civilization started moving to the Midwest, these women, The Prophetic Sisterhood is one of the books. I believe it's in the library over there. These women were moved out of their position. They were moved out of the ministry. The ministry they were called to and the ministry they were, some of them, quite successful at. They were more pastoral care, more caring, not thundering from the pulpit. The men in the East decided this was not okay. So they move them out. And so here this prophetic voice, again, gets marginalized. However, these women, they didn't get marginalized to silence. They got marginalized into the suffrage movement. They were not silenced. And we experience a lot of freedom and a lot of equality in our culture today because of their voice. So there is hope. When we experience a prophetic voice being expressed, because the prophetic voice is a calling to speak, and because you cannot enter this country, you will go to this country and speak. You will not be silenced. Today, I love that story. I just love that story. But what that means is you can't put a case, you can't put, a model, you can't put a language around the struggle for freedom, a container, a school of thought, a denominational belief system around the search for truth. Because when you drive the people who are genuinely called to search for truth and genuinely called to love and to care and speak against oppression, when you pull them out of one language system, they come over here and they immediately enter a different language system with the same message. Because they're not talking about a belief system. They're talking about the experience of freedom in life, which is beyond belief. They're not captured by a belief system, so when you say you're not welcome here, there's a depression and they go away. They take that inspiration, that's what churns inside of them, and they go over here and they speak wherever they can. And for many, until they're put to death. Something is happening in our culture today, in the Unitarian Universalist today, is that I believe we have lost a religious language. We have lost some sense that binds us together when we have this sense of being overwhelmed, when we have this sense of, I talk to my brother all the time when we talk to this, and we often say the only answer is to go fishing. You know, and sometimes exactly what we do. We quit and go fishing. Okay. But something, when we come together as a community, when we're not moving, when we're not struggling together to exercise our voice in the community. I remember reading when I first went to seminary, Southern Baptist Seminary. I don't know how they introduced this Episcopal theologian, but I was grateful they did, a guy by the name of John Macquarie. At the end of this 600-page book, he says, just as there can be an authentic people, so there can be also an inauthentic people. And I never really thought about that before. How can a whole community, a whole nation be inauthentic? Not real, not core, not caring for one another. And it's like one of those things, once you read it and you look up and you go, oh, okay, then you can see it. You can see it all over the place, but until you read it and somebody puts it together for you. And what I'm suggesting is that when we lived in a way that's diminished, when we live in a way that prophetic voice against oppression is not speaking, when we live in a way where we want to do a project and two strong people speak against that project and a project dies, but we know in our heart it's a good project, but it dies, and so that dissociation, that state of dissociation, that state of low-grade chronic depression, which many people in our country live with today, they just function, we're not celebrating life. We hear of Florida Power Electric want to do that, but we don't go to the meeting. We know that's what's going to happen if there's no opposition, but we don't speak again. That's depression. That's low-grade chronic depression. I'm still getting up and going to work. I'm still going to church. But when it comes to say, wait a minute, you can't do that in our community. I remember my father moved to Volusia County recently, and the county council voted against not having voting machines without a paper trail. Right? Because the people spoke. But there was a lot of statewide pressure, a lot of people from the governor's office saying, we want this. But if those people were so depressed about who they were as citizens, they would have had machines that have no record, that have no paper. But they were not depressed. They said no to that. Something happens that we're divided inside, or we're dividing within the community. And I'm going to suggest today that it's we don't have a sense of religious sensibility. And this is where the language of religion and salvation comes in. And when the language of religion and salvation comes into a Unitarian community, the flags go up. Because we've come from a lot of places that were oppressive with language of religion and language of salvation. And we left those communities because of that oppression. And so when those words come up and that language comes up, we pay attention. So I know you're paying attention. Because I'm going to talk a bit about, and maybe unless we have that somehow a language of understanding of what it means to be human, some universal understandings of what it means to be human, so that no matter what we discuss, no matter what we perceive, no matter what differences we have, as we are joined together, We can be together. We can share together. We can disagree together. But that foundation will not be broken. A Unitarian Universalist minister in Austin, Texas, Davison Lohr, he's got an article in the UUA Today, an interview in the UU World Today, but this article that I was reading was rejected from the UU World 1999. It was too political or too something. But anyway, I'm not going to go into all that. But I want to read a bit about how he talks about defining religion and salvation. Because I think as he talks about it, he moves an understanding of religion and salvation beyond belief systems. Religion comes from the Latin word regere, which means to reconnect, which means to do again, which is in the root words of the lig of religion comes from ligament. It refers to being connected. So here's this reconnection and connecting with strength, but yet it's flexible. But the implication is sometimes we get disconnected. Sometimes we get broken. So the process of religion is to reconnect us, to bring us back together, but yet in a flexible way, not in a rigid way. The word salvation comes from the Latin root to salve, which means a healthy kind of wholeness. So he says, putting them together, religion is to search for a feeling of reconnection to a healthy kind of wholeness. Reconnection and a healthy sense of wholeness, in a way, is beyond beliefs. It's not about beliefs. It's about experience between one another. It's about an experience within ourselves. It's about an experience within our community. And many different languages can address that. But when we're talking about the flexibility of religion, the flexibility of how to put a salve on where we are wounded, no one particular language, no one particular denomination, particular religion can be better than the other. The goal is experience, not agreement and belief. And it's crucial that we begin to understand that. For about 18 years, I guess the past, I don't know, 12, 13 years, Helen and I have been working on this understanding that persons are blessed, known, good, loved at the core of who they are. And a sense of being blessed has the feeling state that you are welcomed. And you know what the feeling of being welcomed is like. And you also know what the feeling of being welcomed is not like when you're not welcomed. On your job, in your home, with your spouse, with your children. We know that experience. We also know the at-easeness of being welcomed. And we also know when we are welcoming. These aren't beliefs. These are experiences. And that sense of being, that's a sense of what we call being blessed. There's a sense of welcoming and being welcome. That sense of being known, was what as I talk about it, is emotional safety. That where we are with one another and within myself, I can be emotionally safe. Now, you might say, wait a minute, what do you mean emotionally safe within yourself? Do any of us struggle with an internal judge? Do any of us struggle when we think about the internal judgment, what side of us is being judged? If we've got an internal judge, we've got a side that's being judged. And often, if that's a strong internal judge, there's often shame that goes along with that internal judge. See, the way that we're talking about religion today means that that internal judge and that sense of shame gets reconnected and gets saved and can live together and can be integrated and can be whole. And then as we're in relationship and as we're in community, that's how we are together, regardless of what we believe. It's just how we are together. With a sense of good, I talk about being creative and being free to be creative, spontaneous to think, that when you want to contribute something, there's no counter voice that says, don't say that, that sounds kind of dumb, or don't say that, that's not going to be heard here, or whatever it might be, that the creativity within inside of you puts that word out here, and you're strong enough to put that word out here, or that art project, or that idea, whatever that may be. In a sense, no matter what the response is to it, you're strong enough to hold it out there to find out if it's going to be welcomed. and cared for. And another way to understand that is how often, and say in your primary relationships, do you put an idea out there and it's not cared for? Do you say something and somebody brushes that aside and moves on to something else? Because that idea, in a sense, for a moment in time, is part of who we are. It comes from us. But in the caring community, whether I disagree or agree with the idea, when it's put out here in the middle of the room, like I'm going to go up and protest Florida Power and Light because I'm saying that's a movement toward fascism, when the corporations and the government rule the citizens and do what they want to do regardless of the voice of citizens, by definition that's fascism, we're tired of hearing about it. Well, I want to be able to say that and not have a response from my community that we're tired of hearing about it, as opposed to, what exactly do you mean? What do you mean that's the definition of fascism? What do you mean when you have the triangle of citizens here, government here, and business here, then that's more about a democracy where the institutions of society support the well-being of the citizen. Right? What do you mean when the triangle's upside down and business and government stand on top the citizenship, that's fascism? By definition, that's fascism. We're tired of hearing about it. Why might we be tired of hearing about it? I'm overwhelmed. If I don't have a community where I can come together and there aren't foundational beliefs that are reconnecting us, that are soothing our wounds personally, relationally, culturally, I won't begin that reconnective process within myself. I won't begin that reconnective process within relationship. And I surely won't begin that reconnective process within my church community, because I'll sit over there saying I'm not going to be heard anyway. I'll marginalize myself within my own community, and I'll subgroup with some people in that community, and over lunch and over dinner, I'll be the voice in a wilderness against my own particular community, so that when I go here, I come in here with an attitude, and I'm not going to join any projects anyway, whether I agree or disagree with them, because I'm disconnected. Because we don't have that foundational religious language, that salvation of soothed, that salvation of healing, not some supernatural process, but the salvation of that I am united within myself. I am reconnected within myself. And I'm living in a way in which I'm emotionally safe, and I can relate to people so that they sense they're emotionally safe, because we are welcoming one another even if we disagree with one another. When we have that kind of foundation for who we are as Unitarian Universalists, when we are battered and when we are in battle with a world out there that is oppressive, where there is injustice, and we see it and we read it and we march on the street and we feel overwhelmed, when we stand on the bridge and hold up signs that say national health care and people ride by shaking their fists, which always astonishes me, often people who don't have health care. Often people don't have health care, pay taxes so other people can have health care, but they'll vote for not having health care. It's confusing. It's confusing. When we have that religious connection, that will hold us so that we will not be dissociated, we will not be depressed, because it will hold us, and in our minds, no matter where we are in this building, having dinner, having lunch, standing on the bridge protesting, looking at smokestacks being built, no matter where we are, we draw strength from our community. For our community's integrated. There is a oneness within our community that gives us strength, that I can stand and protest that which is going to happen anyway. That I will not be silenced, even though it's going to happen anyway. I will not be depressed when I stand with five with homemade signs and there's 100 with professionally made signs. That I'll be strong and I will not collapse within myself. I will stand out here and I'll be strong, because I know I am in a community that's healing and that's connected, where I can truly be myself.